This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports. I've got a new book, and this book is probably a book you've seen, heard of, thought about, or seen in a report, referenced in a newspaper, because it's a book that is part of the popular trend, which is predicting China's downfall or predicting China's economic crisis or just labeling some of the problems with China's economic expansion and boom. It's called The China Price, The True Cost of Chinese Competitive Advantage, and it's by Alexandra Harney, and it is published by Penguin Press out in 2008. Now, let me quickly go over the chapter list before I summarize my thoughts of the book. The chapter list will give you kind of an idea of where the book's going. Chapter 1 is called Hooked. Did you get that? Hooked, like addicted, hooked. Chapter 2, Five Star Factory. Chapter 3, The Physical Cost. Chapter 4, The Gold Rush. Chapter 5, The Stirring Masses. Does that scare you? The Stirring Masses. Ooh, scary. The Girls of Room 817 is Chapter 6. Chapter 7, Accounts and Accountability. Chapter 8, The New Model Factory. Chapter 9, The Future of the China Price. Okay, I think that chapter list kind of does it for me. This is a book I definitely did not want to read. It's a book I did not want to review, but given that the site has a lot of books that are positive, a lot of books I've already read, a lot of books that are already well-known in research, of course, they're all going to be positive thumbs-up reviews. I thought, hey, let's give it a shot and see if we can get some books that maybe can be more negative review or thumbs down. And, of course, my favorite to do that would be, number one, books written by reporters, and number two, books that, well, have a kind of slant to them that don't really align with any kind of reality I know. So I've gone out and got a couple books. One of them lived right up to my expectation, and that is The China Price. Another one completely surprised me and turned out to be a great book, and that's going to be the next book review. So hang around for that one. In any case, let me go ahead and give you the rundown on The China Price. The China Price is a book with many problems. The most important or paramount problem is, right away, it starts out by stating its orientation, which is it's going to kind of be an undercover report or expose on what's wrong with China, what's wrong with the boom, with the economic boom, specifically what's the problem with supplying the West with its ever low prices of goods? What are the issues and what's the cost of that? You know, that might seem okay, but from my perspective, these are really economic questions. The book never really addresses economics in any way, shape, or form. In fact, Ms. Harney is a reporter that's been working with the Financial Times, and I really need to go and look at some of her Financial Times reports because it seems to me she doesn't have any grasp of economics at all. And the book has this really serious problem. It's always confused. Almost every chapter, there are statements about how, on one hand, things are really terrible, but on the other hand, things are this way because of another issue, and then there's another issue, and we never really see what the core point is because these things are parts of macroeconomic movements, and that's the way it goes. I think the basic premise I have problems with is there's always a kind of inference or undertone that things need to be regulated, things need to be controlled. So the factories need to have much more control. The laws in China need to be enforced more. Things like the minimum wage need to be enforced more. But we all know that the minimum wage is an issue that's not so straightforward in China. In fact, the whole legal structure is not so straightforward. We know things like employees that are working, that are looking for overtime, that are not interested in having just a 40-hour week, are not going to stay around a company that only gives them a 40-hour week. She does acknowledge things like this, but then turns right around and says, well, they should be enforced anyway. Unless I'm missing something, the Chinese economy has just come out of 50 years of regulation and control, and that didn't seem to work too good. So now we're in a more free market situation, and things are working their way around, things are working out, and that's the process of the capitalist economic system. That's the way it works. So this is the biggest problem I have with the book. Besides that, let me get into some specifics. For example, one of the big issues with the writing of the book is it has a kind of detached, third person, kind of from outer space satellite perspective, where everything has a pseudo-objectiveness to it. The problem there is it objectifies many of the people she's talking to. They become just pawns in her game, in her board where she lays things out. And you don't really get a feeling for those people. Sure, she's got the poor people that have lost everything because they had a physical ailment caused by the work conditions. Okay, and the husband dies. We feel sorry for that. But, you know, that's so blatant and so artificial. What about the majority of people living their lives day to day? We don't get into that kind of lifestyle. We don't get into their minds. We don't really see what's happening. All we want to do here in this book is pull out some of the extreme examples and say, hey, look how terrible it is. The problem with this is, you know, you don't need to look very far in America to find examples that are highly similar to that. We just had not too long ago, after the release of this book, actually, the salmonella contamination of peanut butter in a factory out of Texas where the managers knew about it for a long time and avoided inspection and covered things up. So is this really a China price thing? For example, let me go a little bit deeper with this objectification, which really bugs me a little bit. There's one part in the chapter of the girls of room 817 where I think this chapter really gets the closest to getting us a little bit closer to people's real lives, to the workers who are working in the factories' real lives. And she just never really goes deep enough. For example, let me give you a little piece from the book. On page 168 in this chapter called The Girls of Room 817, the last sentence says, "The girls discussed the rumor that Shenzhen Rishun was moving away from the city center. Meng was thinking of quitting." Okay. That's interesting. So this is what the girls were talking about, and Meng was thinking of quitting. The problem I have with this sentence is, how do you know she was thinking of quitting? It's so detached. Did somebody tell you this? Did she report it to you? Is it secondhand? Were you talking face to face? So there's nothing in the book where it says, she told me, I said to her. There's none of that give and take. There's none of that contextualization of the reporter. Because it seems to me that Harney is really going after this expose kind of, I'm going to reveal something. I'm going to show you the truth. But in doing so, she completely misses the opportunity of being kind of embedded with a thick description that let us really understand things and get us involved and have that kind of feeling. Instead, it reads, half of the book reads like a primer on why China is screwed up because they don't have unions. Never mind that the U.S. is completely, in the trend of getting rid of unions, but we don't worry about those details. That's just silly details. So I think this is a great opportunity lost because from what I understand, what I've seen of Harney's work, she's fluent in Chinese. She seems to be fluent in Mandarin. Her website reports she's fluent in Cantonese. If that's true, then why don't we get more of that feeling. Let us know a little bit about the person who's involved. I'm a great believer in that kind of adding the perspective, the reflexiveness of the reporter in the context. But this is where reporters so often fall down. They're not anthropologists. They don't understand what they're getting involved in. They're going to go in there and uncover the facts as they are. And, you know, this really left me cold. So rather than have a book that involves me or makes me feel something about the characters, the people who are there, the situations they're in and the complexity, it all comes off very cold and manipulated on the part of the author, where she just kind of picks and chooses what fits her story and then throws it in there. Let me give you another example. At the end of that chapter, the very last sentence of that chapter, let me give you the quote. She told her little sister to study hard so she could attend university and give herself more options beyond factory work. Quote, I don't want her to have to live this migrant worker's lifestyle. Unquote. That's it. So the whole chapter just left off that way. The whole chapter is left off with one of our main characters, Meng, just simply saying about her little sister, I don't want her to have to be a migrant worker like I am. That's it. That's all we get. And that's really one of the very few quotes we get. And I felt like, well, so, and then what? And then, So we're just really left out in the cold there. I think it's a great opportunity lost. Let me jump around a little bit here and go a little bit deeper into some of the obvious judgmental parts of the book. There's a whole chapter talking about accountability and the auditing of factories in China. And let me read this one sentence to you. It says, the auditing system had other perverse effects as well. Perverse effects. Perverse effects. And in this context, what she's talking about is how the companies, such as, for example, Walmart, the buyers, would impose on the China factories that they have to follow some minimal standards, and they're going to be audited, such as, you know, no child labor, you have to follow the minimum wage laws, you cannot go over so many hours of overtime, etc. So she says these buyers will impose this, but at the same time, the buyers impose their very strong demands on low prices. And so they have perverse effects. Now, that is really hilarious, because these are not perverse effects. These are fundamental economic repercussions of what the actors in the economy are doing. It's economics 101. It's basic. You know, if you tax somebody for water consumption, they will consume less water. It won't get you more tax. If you tax businesses heavier and heavier, you're going to lose incentive to have anybody have a private business. These are fundamental economic laws. And here she says, whoa, what a surprise. We have perverse effects. Whoa. But then she never really goes beyond that. It's never, okay, so what? Then what? Well, if they have perverse effects, then does that mean we shouldn't have done them from the beginning? No, her answer, the tone is always, we should do more. We should be more effective. We should lay it on more. We should find a way to solve this problem. My assertion is it's not a problem. It's a natural evolution. It's a development. This is the way it goes. Let me go a little bit further in that chapter. That chapter really pushed my buttons, the chapter on accounts and accountability. Listen to this little quote. The fact that so many factories are lying about their working hours and wages raises questions about their honesty in other areas, including chemicals and raw materials used in production. What else are Chinese factories hiding? This is on page 204. What else are Chinese factories hiding? This is part of the problem here. Lots of the book just frames the Chinese situation in a very negative frame, objectifying the other, you know, these are those Chinese this way. And I don't think she means it that way, because it seems like she's been living in Asia for a while. But, you know, I come off with the idea that she's one of these people who's been here for a while, but, you know, says the place is screwed up and it really needs to get with the modern system to be up to date. The problem with that is there's different definitions of what the modern system is. these things are very subjective. They don't really have objective boundaries. So when she comes off and saying this, I'm caught up with my immediate response, which is, yeah, what else are Chinese factories hiding? Well, hey, hello, anybody who stays and works in a place like Hong Kong and Taiwan for even just a few months will realize these factories, these owners are so busy, so driven, so motivated by profit, by opportunities, that they're, let's just say they're the super capitalist, that they're hiding and doing things and keeping multiple books from everybody. And where does that come from? Hey, you know where that comes from? It comes from living with the communists for 50 years. You learn to get by. It comes by from living under the KMT for 50 years, you know. You learn to have two, three sets of books. Because if you didn't, you wouldn't have survived. Your business never would have made it. Completely normal. This is not a special case of just now. This is part and parcel of what it is to be a Chinese businessman. It goes with hand in hand with the success. So I really wanted to get from Harney's book a little bit deeper understanding of, okay, from the owner's mind, from the owner's point of view, what is it that's pushing him to do this and do that? But instead, she often reports the really shallow side of it. You know, she reports that, oh, the factory owner said that he can't pay his workers on time because the buyer, like Walmart, will delay payment. Well, of course the factory owner is going to say that, but that's not true for 1 minute. If you work in Taiwan even for a few months, you will soon experience that every owner delays payment as long as they can. It is completely normal situation. It's obnoxious. It's extremely inconvenient. It may even borderline, you know, corrupt or illegal, but everybody's doing it. And why are they doing that? Is it really because their buyers are delaying payment? Well, their buyers may be delaying payment, but are you saying these people have no capital? They have nothing left over from the last quarter? No, you know what? They're taking every dollar. They're taking every dollar and they're investing it somewhere else. They're taking it and they're putting it in some harebrained scheme, like some kind of biaohui, which we're going to have another podcast on, just these investment groups. And they're putting them in there, or they're throwing them into the stock market, or they're throwing it into the real estate market, and they're hoping for a quick payoff, and then they're going to double their money. This is what they're doing. And this is part of this super capitalist approach. There's just really very, very little aversion to risk. And I think that has never come through in this book at all. It a little bit touches on it, but never deep. A really great opportunity lost. So this is what I call competitiveness. And I think really what Harney's calling something disgusting and terrible that needs to be corrected. And that's not the way I see it. In another quote in this Accounts and Accountability, she's kind of laying out that even other factory owners in other countries are shocked by these Chinese behaviors. On page 206, the quote is, factory managers in other countries told one former China-based auditor that China's skill at falsifying puts them at a disadvantage. Quote, time and time again, when I give out my business card, the factory owners all over the world say, you know, we just don't understand China. We just don't understand how the factories operate. What is wrong with just doing things by the books? Unquote. So she's finding other business people, other factory owners, and saying, oh, I'm so shocked by those Chinese. Well, excuse me, I think that's called competitiveness. Did I miss something there? Of course, it's easy for us to blame that on things like they're corrupt, they're backwards, they're not modern, they're illegal, they're doing everything wrong, which in some cases they are, but they're not doing that in South America. You know, the thing is that in China, because that competitiveness emphasis is so widespread, that capitalist ethic, that idea of getting rich, of getting something, is so widespread. It's not the boss forcing it on the employees. It's the employees forcing it on the boss more often. So I think that chapter, Accounts and Accountability, really came across as the really strong chapter that showed, she's just out to lay it out that the Chinese are doing something wrong and we need to fix it. And I never got clear on how this is just different from a free market and there's nothing to fix. It fixes itself. For example, let me follow up. This is the classic non-economist error. On page 208, the bottom of 208 and the top of 209, she complains that prices are so low. How is this possible? I always love this, right? How is this possible? And this is the classic, pessimist view of economics. The world's going to run out of food. We're going to run out of raw resources. We can't sustain this growth. Of course, it completely overlooks the role of productivity and technology. But hey, who cares? She says in this chapter on page 208, retail prices for footwear dropped 3.5% between 1998 and 2006, despite a 23.7% increase in overall retail prices over the same period, according to the American Apparel and Footwear Association. Okay, so bad, bad economy, bad, evil economy. Prices for consumers have dropped 3.5%. And meanwhile, the prices to the retailer at the retailer level have increased 23.7. Bad, bad economy. How dare you? Okay, whatever that means. I don't get it. She also goes on to say prices of flat panel televisions fell 40% in 2006 on average, in part because of discount wars between retailers. Okay? So flat panel prices dropped 40%. Okay, Ms. Harney, and the point is, so this is which school of economics that you're talking about? Oh, prices should not go down, right? We should have prices set by the government, and they would, of course, never go down. We should have wages set by the government, and of course, they should never go down. They should only increase, and everybody will be happy ever after. That's the school of what economics? All right, that's communism. It didn't work. Got you. Okay. I think that the book is not a terrible book. It starts out with, the same old history of migrant workers and a little bit of context. Nothing super interesting or great. I wish China Books could just cut this stuff out from now on. But I think that this book is a real downer. It just plays right into the hands of objectifying Chinese as being some kind of having some kind of problem. In the last couple chapters, she does the classic move with saying, well, things are getting better. Things can get better. There are some example factories that are better. And again, I just come back to what we're always talking about on this site. It's not a question of better. It's not going to ever be the same as the West. It's culturally, fundamentally different. But what it is going to be is shifting and moving, just like in the U.S., things shift and move. You move from a more open market to a more controlled market to this and that. The same thing is going to happen in China, but rather than just labeling things as bad or good or backwards and modern, you really need to have a much more contextualized view. I'm certainly not against the idea of incorporating the overall channel prices into the product. The question is how, and is the market really not efficient in doing that? She never really makes the case. Rather, she just goes on the individual level and says, bad, bad, bad. This person lost his hand. This person died. That's bad, bad, bad. But in every industrial society, people are paying some kind of price like that. She then goes on to mention things like migrant workers who are making money, sending it back home, building houses. So what, are we supposed to stop them from doing that? Is that not a good thing? Have you gone and measured any of that economic growth and benefits from that? Are you at all doing any kind of comparison on balance? No, we're simply finding a few cases and saying they're terrible, they're bad. I don't want to underestimate that, though. I don't want to say that it doesn't exist. It does, and it is quite costly. But this is for the government and the economic situation, context, markets to deal with. Not just to lay out and say, hey, you guys are causing this, which is basically her message. The buyers are causing this by asking for low prices. this just lays it out to such a simplistic answer, which has no possible way of being addressed. Completely impossible. What are we going to do? Are we going to say that the government should set these prices? We know that doesn't work. Even in her own book, she cites research about consumers' willingness to pay more. And of course, that research, the question is, you know, do consumers really believe that when you say it was made in a non-sweat factory, it was not involving any child labor? You know, when I see those signs, I think most consumers are like, I'm not sure I believe that. Again, I think that if you don't know anything about China, it's not going to teach you a whole lot. In fact, it's going to get you a little bit biased, thinking it's terrible. I know a lot of people in America who would love this book because they're so down on how China kind of cheats the system this way. My mind is it doesn't do anything. Research-wise, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't bring any new information to the table. It doesn't contextualize it all. It doesn't bring any rich context. It doesn't tell us anything we don't already know. And it doesn't really even make its case strongly that overall there's an economic price being paid and what that price is. We don't see that at all. So this is a book I do not recommend. And if you have any comments, leave your comments. Maybe you disagree with me. But next week we have a book I fully expected to be just as unpalatable. However, I was very surprised. So come back for that show. This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese Consumer Connection, where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports.